You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 62, the painting of Prague, of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Blank.
And we're talking about
legacy, most of the time. So guys, I have big news for me. And for you.
Big news for you? wait, what? I mean, I'm totally out of the loop. I haven't played since 6 weeks or so. Tell me, what has happened? I don't have any clue, yeah?
I lost the biggest match of my life.
The biggest?
You played in Friday Night Magic?
I played Friday Night Magic and lost the finals. No, I actually played in Prague at the Eternal Weekend and basically lost a match that was worth around 2k.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah. Because, like, apparently a few of the guys did it. When you are 7-1 and get to 8-1 and you play for the win and in for the top 8, some of them basically split. They said, yeah, we will sell the card that we get and each of us gets half the money. And those cards apparently sell for like 4-5k. So I basically lost the match. Worth around 2k.
Was it one of those Dragon Rage channelers?
It was one of those Dragon Rage channelers.
Damn.
Okay, they really are.
Mm-hmm.
I
also heard that around 2, 3, 4k, something around.
Oh, wow.
There's only 16 currently?
24 in the near future, but currently only 16 running around.
Mm.
And
okay, wow.
Yeah, the cards are quite expensive.
That I understood correctly. You were 8-1?
No. I was 7-1.
But you could have split, or you could have drawn.
When I'm 8-1, I could have drawn with the other guy 8-1. So basically the match.
So you needed to have, you needed to win the 7-1 match that you played?
Exactly.
What opponent, what deck did you face?
I faced a really unknown player. He's known as the name Julian Jakobowicz. He won 2 Eternal Weekend to his date and top 8ed another one. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's a really great player.
Actually,
a random Jimmy.
Just a random Jimmy, yeah.
No. Jokes aside. Congratulations, Peter. I think this is probably your best year in Magic so far. Am I right?
It is his first year. No, this was such
I mean, on the big stage, it's for sure my
top
best year.
16 in Bologna, and now
and near top 16.
I missed top 16.
Place 52.
It was place 52. My losses were to rank 1, the winner Julian. Lost against rank 15, another 8-2 player. In the last round, and Rodrigo Tugores, which finished right at 53rd.
So basically, all great and big names in the community, am I right? So
yeah,
you can't be, yeah.
No, yeah, you can lose to Rodrigo Tugores.
Yeah, and you can't complain about this, I would say. This is a pretty good result.
It's like after round 9, I said, yeah, good luck. I lost against the Eternal Weekend winner. Now, twice Eternal Weekend winner and a GP winner. So, well.
I would say, just for our listeners, maybe we had it just into your like top matches at the moment. But just give us a little bit of an explanation. How did you experience the event as a whole? Because it was Eternal Weekend and it was in Prague.
It was actually really great. The venue was big enough to support all the players. There were a lot of basically sellers of cards out there. We had Kai Savatari here, selling his tokens and stuff like that, which I actually needed because I played a new card for the tournament, so I could cry into my opponent's face, Fof, Erlingas. And
yeah, this card is basically everywhere. I mean, I don't follow Magic Twitter in the last some weeks that much, but even I have seen that everybody and their mother is playing Fof, Erlingas right now.
It's pretty good, pretty common.
It's really, really sick. It's one of the best things that you kind of can do as a control player, because it's the big finisher that also draws you accumulative cards in the near future. It's really strong out of like initiative, because on the one hand it pitches to Chromebox and produces white and red, but on the other hand it's a really, really strong thing that you can do on turn 1, 2, 3, 4. It's an amazing top deck. On paint, it's the same. You can play it on turn 2, turn 3, or in the late game for like 5, 6 tokens. Really, really strong card.
It has been one of the latest adaptions for the deck, I would say. Well, the newest inclusion, basically.
It was the newest inclusion for Painter. There were some thoughts running around like 2 weeks prior, I think, starting out. And Callum basically posted his list on Friday or Thursday, and I basically chatted with him a little bit about his thoughts. Then I told him what I think, and then I adapted it and was once again a wise choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I would find interesting here is it's more of a hypothetical scenario, but think of it, what would have happened if you played Fof, Erlingas back in Bologna? I mean, what were the differences between your deck now and your deck then? Would have been easy to just put in the Fof, Erlingas back then?
I have to think about the metagame and stuff like that, but I would be a little bit better prepared against control and combo. All in all, I think the change is like that it's a little bit... It's on the one hand a little bit harder to cast. You lose some utility, but you gain a stronger card on a generic phase of the game, I would say. Because like...
What did you have before of that?
I played an Aethos One Canonist and a Breyer's Apprentice.
Okay.
Both of those cards fill like some slots in regards with Goblin Engineer, because Aethos One Canonist, for example, really strong versus Storm combo versus control, because it slows down the game. And Breyer's Apprentice, on the other hand, is like a card I loved to play against like Scam and Bowmasters, because it's something that draws you cards or allows you to draw cards even though you don't draw cards, because you can't play from the top of your deck. Produces some additional bodies. I think now it's a little bit better with Fof, Erlingas, because like the Bowmasters are reduced in numbers. Back in Bologna, I think there were a much higher percentage of Bowmaster in play. I think there was like...
There was a lot of Scam. I can remember it was pretty much Scam was running around everywhere. And so it's just, I think, that's why I said it's a little bit of a hypothetical question, but I find it interesting to have this mind game here. Maybe you would have gone even farther if you would have incorporated Fof, Erlingas already.
Could be. For example, versus like 8 key, the matchup I lost on stream for the top 8, there it would have been really great to have the Fof, Erlingas, because it's something that you can deploy on turn 1-2 to draw you additional cards and produces a threat on the other hand. And for example, like Aethos on Canonist does nothing against the artifact combo deck. But I think that the choice back in the day was correct, and I think the choice here was also correct.
Yeah, for sure. Just one more question. Have you thought already about Fof, Erlingas back then?
There were some thinking about it, because it was a strong card. But I believed I should be the artifact combo deck or the artifact deck. And nowadays, if you look at the painter deck lists, it's
it's wild.
It's wild. I'm playing so little artifacts nowadays. It's insane.
Yeah, artifact hate is still rather potent threat from your opponents, I would say. So you need to be able to
recover.
You recover, and you need to be Meltdown is a card still, you know. And
the thing is, like, Meltdown is okay.
Yeah.
It's at best okay versus Painter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you build your deck with Meltdown in the mind. Yeah.
Because you're playing like the 4 fast mana in like the 3 petal, the 1 opal. Then you play the 2 grindstone, the Nihil Spellbomb in the main, mm-hmm. or the Solgan Lantern for some folks. Then you play. I'm playing 1 Great Furnace. The 4 Painter, I think that's all my artifacts in the main deck.
Yeah, that's not a lot, actually.
The Phyrexian Dragon Engine and the Chaos Defiler. But yeah, those are also the 2 additional one-offs that I have in the deck to search out with the Goblin Engineer.
But like, for the whole event itself, it was pretty packed, right? It was over, was it 713 players in the main event?
Or something?
No, it was 720 was the cap and 713 were the players.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah.
But it's amazing. I mean, this is a pretty big event for Central Europe.
Legacy is dead, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
We've seen it. We see it in probably every big tournament all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And there were like 680, I think, for Eternal Weekend Asia too. Yeah. So, and I think like 800 already pre-registered for Eternal Weekend America. So,
I followed the stream a little bit, to be honest, because Anurag did make an amazing job throughout the whole weekend, together with the casters that were commentating the whole time, all matches. And Anurag was doing like the caster work basically in the background.
Okay.
It was completely blown out. I think we saw it on Twitter, a couple of them, when he was just about to faint basically. He's doing the great job for the community and to bring coverage to all players. And this was really, really amazing. So I definitely enjoyed that I could be able to watch a little bit of what's going on in the Eternal Weekend. And yeah, it was really nicely done from that perspective, for sure. And we could definitely learn from that also, I would say.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, he's probably one of the best commentators out there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he did not comment. He did only do the technical stuff.
Producing.
Oh, okay,
he was a producer.
Inigo did for...
Exactly, exactly. He was only behind the scenes doing all this, casting work, but not talking. I mean, just
but yeah, production. That's also a lot of work.
You need somebody like that, you know, to be able to.
It's insane what he has with him to do all the stuff, because the production quality was great.
Yeah,
and
it was his equipment. Am I right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it
okay? I'm pretty sure it was his equipment. So huge shout out here to Anurag Das. You're truly a jewel of the community.
Yes, absolutely.
And subscribe to his Patreon.
That's what I wanted to say right now. I mean, we seldom make advertising for other people than us, but here we're going to do it. So subscribe to Anurag. also subscribe to Anurag's Patreon. He really deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
And
we want to shout out our patrons, because it's a nice time to shout out Matt Duncan, Gino, and
Moritz. Thank you very much for supporting our little cast. And maybe if you want to join these elite ranks of Patreon supporters, you can always support in response a Legacy podcast.
So,
Peter, we know that this was a really hard day for you in Prague. Tell us about your adventures then. I mean, the playing is one thing, but Prague is a city that, it's like Las Vegas for Europe. Am I right?
Yeah, it is pretty good to get going and have some fun, that's for sure.
It was so, so chill.
This is not what I expected.
No, not really. I mean, my experiences with Prague are a little bit different.
The thing is, like, we arrived there at 8 o'clock in Prague at Friday evening. There were actually only a little bit of a delay of 4 minutes, not like the 3.5 hours that I had when I traveled up to Berlin. So only the Austrian railways. And so everything went great. We arrived in Prague. We ate some local food. So we got to Burger King and
really
and ate some stuff. I completely didn't get the stuff into my stomach, so it was like a great evening. Then I went to sleep, couldn't sleep the whole night, or like I woke up like 4 or 5 times, so the rest was really great. Then I had to stand up like 6:30 or something like that in the morning because of like traveling from the Airbnb to the location with the public transport system, which worked perfectly, so no problem with that. Arrived there like 7:30 in the morning because the tournament started at 9. I had to get some cards for me, so all the preparation was like at best okay. But I prepared at home. I got myself some Apple snacks that I had that I'm currently using for a tournament. Got these, myself these some water. These, it's like
the purees or
yeah, it's like apple puree.
Yeah,
yeah, like a smoothie,
like an apple smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you call them lovingly quetchies, am I right?
Yeah, that's how you call them in Austria. Yeah,
quetchies.
Because quetchies means
it's like squeezies.
Yeah, it's squeezies.
Yeah.
Maybe they're called.
I don't
in
know
American
if it's a name for other countries, but we just this would be the direct translation for that, and I don't know.
Those are great. They give you power for the rounds, but I only had a limited amount with me.
Is there something that you learned for in that regard that you would do differently for the next time for like this big of a tournament that is probably 9-10 rounds?
I maybe switch my backpack because I'm currently having it's like a
satchel,
a bag on that you
It's like a briefcase.
Like a briefcase where I have my deck box in there with some amount of water and some crutches and
exactly
some squeezes. Yes. And this works perfectly fine, but I was limited to 1 liter of water, which is way too little. We couldn't buy some water in the location in those bottles because I was expecting then I could buy some there, but the souvenir store where you could buy those was closed between 10:30 up to 19 o'clock.
What it's the hell? Like the whole day basically.
It was basically the whole day.
But they were open before 9:30.
It was like 10:30.
Before 10:30.
To 19 o'clock, it was like closed. And you could only buy bottled water in glass bottles.
And you weren't allowed to bring them in, am I right?
You would be, but it's like,
okay.
I don't want to take glass bottles with me. Mm. I was able to get a bigger bottle of water later on, but yeah, that's something that was a little bit shitty for me because I wanted to buy some. And it was like at 11 o'clock, I was at the store.
Mm.
And then it was already closed.
But there was no like a buffet or some restaurant or something around?
There was one buffet there,
mm-hmm.
but the line was like 30 minutes or at least 15 to 20 minutes between rounds when it was later on.
Yeah.
So it was like really hard to get there. I had one round where it was like when we had 5 to 10 minutes over the clock, I just bought a coupon to get something to eat after the next round.
Okay.
To get myself something to eat. Then the kind of sausage that I bought was not available, so I only got two wieners, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them just a cut open like it was like a hot dog bun. I just cut it open, put some mustard into it, put the two sausages in it, and just ate it like it was like a cheap ass hot dog.
Yeah.
And it was delicious as fuck.
I did expect it. I didn't expect
this right now. But, yeah. This is the kind of food that Peter is craving for.
But yeah, all in all, it was like I maybe use a backpack for the next bigger tournaments to put in my more supply of water. Maybe not only the squeezies, but some other food like kind of in Austria it's called Hartwurst. It's just a normal kind of sausage that you can
salami style.
Maybe you can relate with maybe some beef jerky or something like
something
that.
Something similar.
Because then you get some other food other than the sugarish stuff that the
yeah,
squeezes
you need some
are.
Proteins also. Yeah.
And also in Bologna, I had the problem that I had to get something to eat. But in my later rounds, I had like a few mid-rangey games where it was like right to the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the possibility to get a friend of mine to get me some food. But if this is a problem for me for most of the tournaments in the later stages, I should prepare something for me because like otherwise it's kind of hard. Maybe get the Coke besides the water too, to get some caffeine in there, maybe some coffee snack or something like that. But yeah, this is something that I'm thinking about, which is like how much you can prepare outside of playing Magic or preparing for Magic, how you can do stuff in the tournament. It's like,
yeah, and I think to a big extent, it's you know, people have different needs. Also, you just have to find out what works for you, I would say. And but of course, I would say drinking is something that should be important for everybody.
Yeah, I was a little bit. I was asking myself, there were a lot of our guys there at the venue. Why didn't you called one of them to bring you some water or something?
I've got one of them to bring me some water. But they also had no bottles and stuff like that. And
okay. And couldn't they get you something to eat or at least?
I have,
everyone was competing for the top spaces.
I haven't seen them around at the location and I feel comfortable up until the point I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like right before round 9.
So you
damn them.
You totally missed the point where it all went downhill.
Basically.
Okay.
Personally, I would say I'm also the guy that is a little bit needs his mental to be high to perform if I'm thinking good, and if I'm thinking what the fuck is now going on, it turns down when I get like. Not angry, but I'm getting a little bit frustrated and stuff like that. And this was like round 9 for me.
Mm-hmm.
In round 9, we had like 27 minutes or something like that over the clock extra time between rounds because of like extra chance and stuff like that. Then round gets shut out. So you're waiting forever. Drank my last water, throw the bottle away and got to my place.
Okay, yeah.
Sat down with Julian. We basically took out our decks. We shuffled. I was just about to roll the die for order even to decide who goes first. Then the judges put your deck in your deck box. We have a deck check now.
Okay. Yeah.
And now you are in the mind of, we are now starting the game. I have to think. I have to play accordingly. And then you have to get back into a choking mood to talk to your opponent. Julian was a really nice guy. We talked about his off year before college and stuff like that. Was really nice with him. But I couldn't refocus back into the game after the deck check.
Yeah.
I think the match before was like 30, 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I had like nearly 50 minutes downtime.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to your place, you are in the mode for competing, then you get thrown back out there, and then you have to start competing again. And I think
it's difficult, yeah.
I totally can see this, I understand you here, because I for myself, I'm the same, yeah. If I am if I don't get into the competing mode or in the tournament mode, then I play always like pure shit and just
okay. You cannot just, I don't know, ignore it for a couple of minutes or I don't know, and then
it was like
it depends. For a couple of minutes, it's no problem. I can joke with my opponent and everything's great. But I totally get what Peter is saying. If then you have a deck check and you're already mentally drained in round 9, actually, it's kind of hard to get back into this mindset. And then that's the breaking point, because the person or the player who is more used to these kind of situations,
of course,
the grinder, has the advantage here, and getting into the right mindset to do the right decisions at the right time in such a high stakes environment is like the key here for success.
I guess what would be important here is to not forget why you are here and why you're sitting at the table.
I think the problem was like I had no supply of anything to eat. If I can snack in between, I think I get something for my blood sugar and stuff like that.
It was mentally
It was mentally and physically.
Well, physically, let's say, yeah.
It was on both sides for me.
Okay.
Because the one thing is like he had a really good draw in game 1-2. There I got frustrated again. I'm playing the whole day. I'm not playing against blue. Then I'm playing against the blue deck. Okay, and then I bought it like shit and I really deserved to lose the match. But the thing is like, I think I should have... No, in the blind it was a keep the thing I had against him in the first round. But for game 2, I was like... I couldn't get something to drink here.
Yeah.
I couldn't snack something in between because like the squeezes you get out, you squeeze them into your mouth and then it's away. So it's nothing like a procedure for like 2 minutes where you have to eat something. It's like really 20 seconds and it's gone. And I couldn't have something to get me back into comfort. Then I boarded like shit. Then I played at best okay. And I really deserve to lose the round.
I guess it is also a combination that this match is was your important match also. I guess you had this pressure also in the back end that you kind of needed to win to get into this top 8 contention.
On the one hand, I was like, I'm 7-1 and I'm in prices. Yeah. Everything is good. Everything else is a bonus.
Maybe you kind of settled already, you know? Because you said maybe to yourself, I'm already in places, it's fine for me. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, this was kind of my mind.
That's also kind of dangerous.
This is dangerous, yeah? If you want to be a spike, let's say.
But on the other hand, I really didn't want to come the pressure really hard to me. Because if you're thinking like, there are 5,000 on the point, there are 5,000. Also problematic. So I really wanted to shift to the other focus.
Yeah, it's...
It's hard.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. It's hard, but...
Focus on magic. That's the point. About your deck. About how you want to play. About your decisions that you make. Just like anybody. You need to come back to this zone and forget about prices. Forget about why you're here. Forget about your opponent that you talked to very nicely a couple of minutes. Just focus on your hand and your magic cards and then make the best decisions that you can do.
Yeah, and that's the problem when you have... No shades against anyone competing and is 7-1 and playing there. If you knew you are playing against one of the best players that we have in the format, it's also kind of intimidating.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the next step.
It's like if you have an end boss of a video game where...
Sure.
Where it's like, everything is now on stakes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
These mental...
You need to be really get comfortable in being in such situations to not let them drain you.
And that was actually something that I had in round 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
Where I played against Rodrigo Tugores. Mm-hmm. Where I also had the kind of respect for him. Then I did some stupid mistake and basically threw away the second game where I could have ended in a game 3 where I could have done something because I think I'm ahead. Just because it was intimidated by the player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you think about this and this creeps into your mindset and you should not be thinking about it.
And then you want to take everything in account, and then you're okay, even though there could something like that they can have.
Yeah.
And then I super piled into like a thing. I want to force out his Pachuca bug, just so that he doesn't have it for the next opportunity. If he has, for example, something, then I let him get a Savannah, because I only thought with the Knight activation he can get the Pachuca bug. Mm-hmm. I was like super, super tunnel vision. Then I had an open white man, and it was fearful enough to combo, and he didn't even have the Swords of Plowshares just because he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
He made this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like the thing.
He bluffed the swords, you mean? Or?
He basically bluffed the swords. But if I'm not getting intimidating, getting turbo-minded into like one thinking, I'm just and winning here.
This is actually a pretty nice situation, a nice thing, because when you have this exact situation, when you play against, for example, this depth stack that he was playing, and if Rodrigo has an open white mana, you respect it. You expect some force, yeah. Some swords, and probably you typically don't go for a combo in your case, for example, paint and combo. But the same situation against a different player, and especially if players give you some kind of hints and signal, oh, I don't have anything, and do what you want or whatever, you just go for the combo and win.
Yeah, which was actually something I did, I think, a few rounds prior, where he said, do you have it? And I just played it and comboed him, even though I would have played it in another way to prevent him to have the removal spell. Because like, if my opponent says, do you have it?
Don't get tricked by this. It could also be...
Yeah, it could have...
A nice metal trick, you know?
But yeah, he didn't have it. Because did you draw the land? You kind of hear it in the voice a little bit.
This could also be some kind of mental... If your opponent is well suited to do so, he can also trick you into doing something stupid. But of course, yeah, it is... things matter. The same situations against different players, you make different decisions. This is
That's true.
Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, tournament was really mentally draining.
Mm.
So
in how was the... how was the overall meta game, you would say? Or how was the...
I mean, the meta game field for me was really non-blue. I played 3 times versus Maverick or Green-White Depths. 3 times versus land. So my place at Magus of the Moon was perfect in the board. I've lost only once to Green-White Depths in the hand of Rodrigo Tugores. Just because he played Legolas. He did some sweet things with it. He started off. Turn 1, Green Sun Sinifoil, Dried Arbor. Pass the turn, land, Goblin Welder. I make a green. Legolas, I make another green. Kill your Welder, and I said, fuck! Then he played a Knight of the Reliquary, and he basically won game 1.
Well,
that's
actually great.
Do you know how... want to know how he won game 2? After that, I did the big misplay. Yeah, he had 2 knights out. And he activated... He activated both knights to search out some lands.
Mm-hmm.
He played 2 Legolas on his both knights. He attacked with both, shoot my 2 blockers down, and basically won the game on X-axis.
Yeah, pump both knights to +2/+2, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, and then Legolas. And
untap with Legolas Creeper.
Yeah.
Okay.
You untap and you get to shoot something when you attack, or whenever it gets tapped. Okay.
That's the reason he just made a mana with the Dryad Armor, and he shot the Goblin Welder. It's so sick.
Nice player.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I totally missed this. I thought about Legolas Quick Reflectors only in
combat.
Or
no,
combat.
No, yeah, yeah. With depths, it's also a nice tool.
Yeah,
for sure.
I thought about only with Mara at Large, but it's also great with knight. Oh, okay.
With knights and Dried Arbor sometimes. It's good. Yeah.
It's a shame it's green. I can't play it. Anti-green mage.
We briefly had a look before I start off the episode to the overall meta game. I would say this Prague, I think Eternal Weekend Prague, this was Ruck was kind of popular or well performing, I would say, right? We have this because we have two or three Ruck decks in the top eight.
Ruck is like, I mean,
this is the percentage sheet that we should have a look at. The one you had, this one.
The best performing decks actually for GP Eternal Weekend
Prague for GP Prague.
Boros Initiative.
This is Asia, I think, right?
This is Europe.
Ah, this is okay. I see.
So we had, so the biggest amount of decks were from.
Do we have some overall percent win percentage data here?
Only on the left side. Ruck Delver was really underplayed there. Seven or eight players with Ruck Delver.
But I think it was above 55% win rate or something like this? One of the better win rates? Compared to the... I think it had a different one, actually.
I think there were a lot of players that actually dropped out early.
Initiative was the best, yeah.
Simo Delver had like
57.9%. Yeah, it's the best win rate for sure.
Wow, that's really strong.
One of the better ones, let's say.
I mean,
also Cascade.
Timo Cascade really strong.
Ruck was really strong, actually. Followed by Initiative, that's for sure.
Initiative was also really consistent. Delver was also Painter was also great.
What I think we did really nicely see in this tournament is that a deck specialist can really do well. This is not the case for like the online meta game.
Yeah.
And the deck that I'm talking is of course Doomsday.
Yeah.
We have Mark Tobiasz, and I think there's also Sebastian Ziller.
Ziller from
those guys play the deck really well and very often, and you really see this in this kind of tournaments. They bashed everything, really. They were really tight in place, and we saw them a couple of times on camera also.
Yeah, Mark Tobiasz actually forgot to draw his last two rounds in Eternal Weekend Asia, because at both rounds he could have drawn into the top eight, but he for some reason played both of them, lost both of them, and went for 10th place at Eternal Weekend Asia. It would have been nearly consecutive top eights for Eternal Weekends in Legacy.
This list that especially Mark played is like completely... It's insane.
It's his list. I think this describes it.
In my opinion, just
for clarification here.
Greedy. In my
tell opinion, me the differences between... I don't know.
Well, you know the turbo list with like personal tutors, like standard. Usually for Kai, for example, plays.
Mm-hmm.
You have this in mind.
Yeah.
This is a white splash in addition.
Okay.
And a green splash in addition.
Okay.
For three Veil of Summer, two the fairies, and three the One Ring.
The One Ring.
Yes.
And three Lorien Revealed.
And three Lorien Revealed.
Oh, yeah.
It is completely greedy. But... It worked out pretty nicely, I would say. Oh, it's even free Teferi, so it's a triple free off.
And in the sideboard, we have like the fourth Veil of Summer.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
two Sheldred, because like it's good, two swords, it's insane.
No, it's really insane. And curious about the One Ring, but it makes sense.
Really good with Doomsday, because if you resolve the Doomsday after the One Ring, you can draw into your pile and stuff like that.
It works nicely with Dark Ritual also, because you just jam out a ring sometimes and then draw a bunch of cards and win and sculpt your hand.
Because like Doomsday a lot of times feels like if you're playing Dark Ritual only for the Doomsday, like an A plus B combo deck.
Yep.
Because like the secondary Dark Rit does not do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you have like additional copies of cards that you want to Dark Ritual out, it's like really strong.
Yep.
Especially in a cantrip deck like with Ponder Brainstorm.
It is a strong deck, but you really need to be good with the deck. It's still so hard to play. You need to have experience and you need to know what you're doing, and then But this is really a nice showing because you don't typically see this deck all that much in it's not a big metagame share. But if you know the deck well, you can just...
Yeah, it's not popular anymore. I think because of Bowmaster. Yeah,
and it's also such a hard deck to play. That's also one of the things. If it would be easy to play, it would be for sure played.
And one of the biggest things in paper is like, you don't get 40 minutes to dissolve your Doomsday Pile.
Yeah.
You get like a minute. And after the minute, you should call the judge. If you are the opponent, slow play.
Yeah, and you have to know your piles. I mean, as far as I know, there is one pile for about 80% of matches or scenarios, yeah. And then it gets tricky.
And I think the situation that you end up with because your opponent, or you need to play around a couple of things, is that you often end up in this 20%, like in a realistic sense.
Yeah.
Because you need to just... Yeah, I mean, you can decide to not play around certain things, but if you're playing against blue, you kind of have to play against the forces, and you need to work with caverns or
surgical.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, a surgical. It's also a simple thing like this. This messes your plan up, and then this is difficult.
Yeah, but one thing that we can say about Prague, and to some extent about Eternal Weekend Asia. The metagame is so fucking diverse.
Absolutely.
It's insane. Mm-hmm. If you look at the top tables, we didn't count it, but I would say from the top 50 players, this is like a 7-2-1 plus and better. And I can say for sure that we have like above 20 different decks.
Mm-hmm.
For maybe even 25 really? Different decks.
Yeah.
I would have guessed about 10 to 15. No. Above 20 seems a little bit exaggerated.
We have
but
8 different decks in the top 8 in Prague.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe you're right.
I think this is the time for specialists.
We have in 10 different...
So you're saying I should put more reps in?
Yeah, I think this is the perfect time for specialists to shine and show your advantage that you know your deck really well and that you need to have a lot of experience against a lot of different decks. If you have this under your belt, you have a lot of experience when you face a random deck, and which is the case right now because you have so many different ones. And if you just know what you are doing, I think this is the time that you could be shining.
Yeah, for some reason I can put a story in here from Prague. I played against Mono Black Midrange. My opponent opposition agent me. He took away my grindstone. He played the grindstone a turn or two later into my painter that I had on the board with a Veld and a Nihil spell bomb. He had 4 mana open. He played the grindstone. He activated the grindstone. I cracked my Nihil spell bomb on him. I welded my Nihil spell bomb back, put the back into play and put the painter into the grave and didn't lose the game. Mm-hmm. A few turns later, he played the ancient explosives X0 to get rid of my tokens, cracked the engineered explosives.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I welded his grindstone because he took control of it and had it in play. Welded it against his engineered explosives.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my grindstone back into my graveyard. He got back his engineered explosives, which just blew up because the trigger was still on the stack. So if you know your cards, you can do some stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So...
Really, really nice interaction right here. That feels like D&T back then.
And the opponent is not thinking really about this. And you know what your deck is doing. And this kind of things is really what you can use. As a
That's the reason I was not worried that he got a grindstone.
Yeah.
Wow, really nice.
Well, this in that sense, really a nice card. Yeah. But you mentioned Eternal Weekend Asia also.
Yeah.
How did this compare against the Prague? It was just a week after that, I would say.
We had a new breakout deck, basically. The best performing deck there was 5 Color Control.
Okay.
With like a 60% win percentage.
Okay.
Followed by Boris Initiative with 57 again and Mono Red Stompy with 55.
This 5 Color deck is a Yorion Pile, right?
Yeah.
Most likely.
All of the control decks, basically. Should be Yoren and normal piles in there.
Okay. Yeah, both of them are playable.
Both of them are in there.
But this Yorion version is definitely...
The default version, probably.
It depends on the. If you ask three different popular control players, you will get three different answers.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I would say it is.
For example, the winner was on five color control
with Yoren, right?
Without Yoren.
Without.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we had like in this tournament there was three different five color control players.
I'm always interested in non-Yoren lists.
Yeah, me too.
I just there were Yoren. Two non-Yoren lists and one Yoren list in the top eight.
Okay.
So both is viable. In the mirror, Yoren is for sure better.
And one interesting thing is like one of the control players only played red for 1/4 Lingas and 1 Meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even play Pyroblast. That should show you the kind of a metagame we have here. Because like blue spells, even though they are cantrips, they don't do anything. Everything that is important and impacts the board is non-blue nowadays.
Yeah, this used to be not so the case, of course, if all the payoffs were also blue-based most of the time. But
for example, you Jace have, and stuff like that.
You still have Uro, but Pyroblast, come on, isn't really great against an Uro.
And it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah,
versus the backside. Yeah,
versus the backside. It's okay versus the backside. It's not good against the frontside. Yeah.
But clearly, Bowmasters is a thing, and we have Beanstalk and Binding and all these kind of things. Non-blue. It is just non-blue, and it's multicolor at this point.
It's interesting. A year ago, people were contemplating 5 Pyroblasts effect in the board.
Yeah.
Because of Delver with Express Federation Murktide.
Yeah.
And now we're almost 1, 2, sometimes even 0 blast effects.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. The metagame shifts are.
It could be that Hydroblast is actually secretly better than Pyroblast.
I really like the Hydroblast.
I am for sure thinking that because getting to kill a Minsk and Boo always feels so great.
Drain Rage Channeler.
Just a Channeler.
Or the 4-4 Lingas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's something
and it
that
pitches
is
to force.
And it pitches to
but one thing that we kind of have to say here.
Yeah.
We have Castlevania Delver in the top 8.
What is Castlevania Delver?
It's called Castlevania Delver because it's called Burg Delver.
Okay.
And Burg is German for castle.
Yeah, let me stop you right there. Back in the day when Death Red Shaman was legal. I'm now a boomer, yeah? We called Burg Delver Castle of Secrets. Not Castlevania. Castle of Secrets.
I have to get
this out of my bloodstream right now. I'm a boomer, I know.
I never heard of that. It's nice.
You never heard of 4-Color Delver?
Yeah, of course, but never heard about this book and castle name. This I never heard.
Okay.
Of course, no 4-Color Delver. I know the Death Red Shaman era.
This was the Renan 6 era.
Castle of Secrets.
Was Renan 6 with black?
Only for Manguchi.
Yeah, okay, because I would say not really.
But yeah, we have 4-Color Delver in there, we have Boros Initiative, and we have the standout performance for the card Leyline of Anticipation. We have Oops Old Spells in the top 8. 10-0, undefeated.
Yeah, nobody expects a Leyline in the main deck. A Sanctity even? I mean,
This is so great. I mean, the only thing I don't like is that it plays 60 cards because normally Oops is 61.
Ah, this is just the ultimate BM. Come on.
No, the thing is, they play 61 online for their deck list because they could not find a cut and they really wanted to have like the one card in the main deck.
The Memories Journey.
A Memories Journey to have an out for a lot of various cards.
What is the best card in the deck?
Normally, it's Memories Journey. In this special iteration,
they don't play Memories Journey.
They don't play Memories Journey, but they play 6 ley lines. Normally, 4 ley lines of Sanctity and 2 ley lines of Anticipation. It's insane. This list is so wild, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wrap my head around it. Things that you normally don't see are 2 Once Upon a Time, a second Red Return, and the 6 ley lines. But I can totally see this. I mean, I can see the appeal going off ley line turn 0. Your opponent is just like, what the hell? What am I playing against? This is just some random bullshit. And then then you go, don't know, planes, vile, and you go, oh, I know, okay, bam, kill you, you're dead.
The thing is, like, the Leyland of Anticipation is even a really, really bad imprint to the Chromox.
It is bad, yeah, for sure.
You don't need the Blue Manor. It's the, only both in of there, right?
They
for the show-off.
They don't play Chromox.
They do.
They do. The player plays a Chromox.
Ah, okay.
Of course, yeah.
I haven't seen...
You need two Chromox. Yeah, you need
them. Normally you play...
Battles also.
Two Chromox.
Two to three.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, this is, I guess, some really... Is it four Pact of Negation also all the time? Yeah.
Four Pact of Negation. Normally four Pact of Negation, four Summoner's Pact.
Ah, okay,
so
yeah.
this list is pretty wild. I gotta admit.
It's the wild, wild west, even though it was played in the east.
In the east. But beautiful, beautiful list. I'm so contemplating.
Yeah, I think... Overall, it is really exciting that this Eternal Weekend is happening again, right? This was the case just before the pandemic times that we had something like this.
I think it was. I think there was one on 2019 in Paris.
Yeah. And then we had everything online. Eternal Weekend was always online the last some years.
I hope this will be. Is it actually every year? I don't know.
There will be one every year.
Okay,
and now with the top 8 getting like the cards, it's a really good payout even. Because if you think about like it's 4 to 5K for the cards, they get 8 of those that are at a minimum 30K, then 20K for the painting, it's 50K for the top 8. And I think there was like generously said like 25,000 payout for all the other prizes. So we had like, 75K paid out for 700 players that played at the maximum 75. So we had like an EV from 1.5. So it's a plus EV tournament. So it's
wow, it's nice. Strong, yeah.
But one thing that I wanted to mention for Eternal Week in Prague, and I want you to be in Stasis for this year, because... On the second day, I played my first big pre-modern event.
Mm-hmm.
And as a first round, before the tournament even started, I got to Mark Poole.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 18 of my basic islands signed by Mark Poole.
Oh, nice.
Got myself a metal card from RK Post, from the City's Blessing, the token, if you know it from...
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm playing Forsaken City as a combo piece in Stasis to remember the trigger to put the metal card on top of my deck.
Nice.
So I pimped my deck out before I even played my first game with it. Then I had like a really, really nice time there. It was actually it was amazing. It was so lovely to play against various people. It was great.
How many players were participating in the event?
I think 137 players were playing pre-modern.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Was one of the bigger tournaments for the format. And it was... I had so many cool games. I played versus balancing things, which is like a thing that wants to rough the whole board away and then puts like flashback creatures from the graveyard to put in tokens and stuff like that. One against it. Then... Oath Ponzer, which is like the Terrageddon deck with plays Armageddon and the Lorgoth, I don't know how it's called, the Terror War.
Terror War, yeah.
Then Angry Hermit and stuff like that. It's so amazing to see all those old cards, and I was there to stop my opponents from having fun.
Was it? I didn't have a look at data. There is no clearly best deck, right? Is it? Kind of
there was a clearly best deck, which was Parfait, but Lantex got banned from the format.
Yeah, yeah.
Now everything is in us.
So nowadays the better decks are Elves and Blue-White Stifle-Knot.
Okay, really? Stifle-Knot.
Blue-White Stifle-Knot is amazing. I would have played this deck actually instead of Stasis, but I couldn't get hand of a few of the cards I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like really insane. Previously with Mono Blue Stifle Knot, if you know the deck, you only had four threads, four Stifle Knots. nowadays the meddling mages are amazing because they stop the key plan from your opponent, if you know the meta game, and are even 2/2s.
Yeah.
And they go a long distance. And the thing is, like, the drive was for me with Stasis or Stifelnaut is like, I want to play Gush.
Yeah.
And Gush is such a cool card. And I mean, what I really have to say about this game, I played the best game of Magic. The best game of Magic involved two players resolving
over, like many games,
not Commander.
oh, shots fired!
playing each of those players playing only one spell for the whole match, for the whole game. It started off with Peter Plank on Stasis, following him up basic island into
Stasis,
not Stasis, Blackwise against control, and my opponent took three. Put a land into play, passed back. I put the land into play, passed back. He took three. He put a land into play, passed back. I missed my land drop because it was a mulligan to 5 or 6 even. Passed back. In the end step, he played an impulse, which was actually the last spell that was played in this whole match, whole game, because he died to the Black Quest, because he had a hand full of removal spells and counter spells and couldn't deploy shit because I did not play a single spell.
This is actually one of the reasons why control decks have so many artifact hate, like the Seal of Cleansing. Disenchant
or something. Yeah, he could not find any disenchant or Seal of Cleansing.
But this is why you need this kind of effects.
Yeah.
Okay, Peter, I gotta tell you this is great.
But yeah, I went 5-1 in the format for 24th place.
Wow. Again, really, really strong. Showing here,
it's such a sweet.
You held in response flag high.
Yeah, that's true. And I really want to shout out my round 4 opponent, which is Dr. Kinladen, also maybe known as Matthias Kinhagen. You use his website a lot of times.
Okay.
He's actually the co-founder of Card Market.
Ah, wow.
Of MKM.
Of MKM. From Magic
Let's
Card
put
Mark.
That right.
Magic Card Market.
And yeah, he was a really nice guy. Had no idea who he was. He even introduced himself as a Matthias. Then after the match, thank you for playing. I have something for you. He gave me a 40 euro Card Market. Like cards to use for the online service, and I really said thank you. And then I've asked him if he was who is the guy that made the tournament series and published a lot of stuff for this.
I know, yeah, but I can't remember the
name. But definitely not Matthias. And I asked him if he's the other guy. But yeah. No, thank you, Matthias, for the gift. I already used it. I bought myself a framed black-bordered Ödland, a Badlands.
Nice.
Because I ran really well for the tournament. And yeah, Premodern is great. We have to do Premodern too. But Legacy is great too. And yeah.
Perfect timing for playing the format, I would say. This is an open meta game. Pick your deck, I would say. And yeah. Practice is important, and learn your deck. And I think right now it's the time to have fun.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe we can see each other next time at the tournament week in Prague.
For example.
Hopefully with the whole cast.
Yeah, would be nice. I would join.
I was asked by a few guys where you two were, so.
Yeah. Nice, yeah.
Would be nice to go there as well.
I would have been there if it wouldn't have been my first day at my new part-time job at teaching, so.
Okay. I always said, like, you are in your parent week, so.
No, it was my first day at my new part-time job.
And
so.
I just got my wisdom teeth removed a couple of days beforehand, so I really could not
drive. Weren't able to, no.
All the guys said you should have rescheduled your appointment. But
probably, yeah. But
Didn't you schedule your appointment?
There was limited appointments. There's only a limited number of surgeries you can take for the whole year, actually. It is only once per month. And, I mean, I could maybe would be able to take like in December. I could have achieved it to December.
Yeah.
Probably. And why? Probably. I mean, I planned it in advance, to be honest. Yeah. And then Eternal Weekend came out after the fact. So I was not sure if the spot was available or not, to be honest.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, we were like 30 Austrian or something like that at the event. So good showing from...
Great community from our side, as always. We really like to be part of this community thing.
A lot of Viennese guys, a few from Graz.
Mm-hmm.
Was really nice. I was also asked where Coin is, but apparently he's going to Bologna next weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tune into the stream from the Four Seasons guys. Tell them to speak English and not Italian.
But yeah, very nice, I would say. I think this kind of wraps it up, right?
For sure. We will hear each other on, I think, on a Christmas special episode. So the next one will be very, very jolly.
Jolly.
Jolly. I think we should shout out our socials.
Yeah.
Well, I totally forgot about them.
And now we have Philip here, so he can tell the exact name that we have.
Yeah, we struggled a little bit last time, actually.
Really?
Let me try. Is it...
Response_legacy?
@response_legacy.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
So even on Tinder. You got it right this time.
Yeah, you got it right. So if you like what we are doing, consider following us on our socials at @response_legacy. You can find me on Twitter. It's @finnickmtg, PHINEKMTG. Daniel, where can we find you on social media?
It's on X or Twitter.
It's X.
Whatever, it is Twitter. It is @FlyingDelva, and yeah, everywhere around this also at In Response, of course. And Peter, in the end, where we can find your wisdoms of painters.
You can find me on www.axe. Yeah, it's an X.
You mean like deodorant or something.
You can find me on Twitter. It works it's for that, no? @UnicornLord, without the empty T. But the O in the Lord is a zero.
We should get sponsored by X. In response, X.
Actually, it's called Lynx in the English-speaking countries.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't know.
Actually, I got myself an X deodorant to the tournament hall. Because I'm...
You needed it.
I'm a generous individual. No, I didn't use it, but I had it with me.
All right. Well, see you next time.
In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.